Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, September 15th, 2020, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Together Decatur, right on track. Decatur teen finds passion in photographing trains. This article is by Donette Beckett from Decatur. Since he was two, Isaiah Bradford has had an interest in trains and railroads. I was either watching videos or going down to watch trains with my grandpa, he said. It's always been my enjoyment. At 14 years old, his hobby is starting to get serious. With a camera in hand, Isaiah can often be found behind the Wabash Depot Antique Center watching the trains go by. The Eisenhower High School freshman began taking photos only 8 months ago. I started this little photography journey of mine, Isaiah said. Ever since then, I've been snapping pictures of trains. Although the job of a photographer is to get close to the subject, Isaiah takes the necessary precautions. He must remain no closer than 25 feet from the tracks. You want to respect the engineers, he said. Trains are a favorite subject of the teens, but his talent has expanded in such a short time. Isaiah has taken portrait photos of families and individuals. I did my first wedding a few weeks ago, he said. And I've been doing photography for the automotive world also. But his interests are still focused on trains. Isaiah's Instagram page has already begun to draw attention. He said the editor of Trains magazine recently reached out to him with an interest in publishing his work. Norfolk Southern Railroad Company also has contacted him. Taking photos of the majestic locomotives requires Isaiah to stay behind the scenes, but that's not enough for the teenager and his love for trains. Isaiah also volunteers at the Monticello Railway Museum. He is currently helping to restore a train car. He's picking away at it, said his supervisor, Kent McClure. McClure began visiting the Railway Museum when he was 12 years old. Now at 58, he sees a similar spark in Isaiah. He reminds me a lot of me when I was that age, McClure said. The experiences have allowed Isaiah opportunities to get up close to the trains. I'm in training and learning how to operate a locomotive, Isaiah said. I drove a train for my first time last week. A career among trains is an option. I've always wanted to work for the railroad, Isaiah said, but I'm kind of leaning on the photography world. Photography experience for the teen has come by trial and error. I've been going out taking pictures of trains or people, Isaiah said. I'm learning every time. Through meeting those in the railroad business as well as fellow photographers, his interests have grown since he began his journey. Christian Clayton, 20, can be found along with Isaiah taking pictures of local locomotives. Each photographer has their own style. He uses more selective editing than me, Clayton said. I use a little more clarity on the photos. The two often visit with the experienced railroaders. They sit for hours in the lawn chairs, Isaiah said. I love talking to them, hearing their old railroad stories. Another train enthusiast has become a mentor to the teenager, and Mike Jacobs, 51, has also found an admiration in Isaiah. I'm just proud of him, Jacobs said. When the two met a year ago, Jacobs taught him what he knew about the railroad. The discussions have turned into life lessons. We'll see a train and make assumptions, Jacobs said. But I show him making assumptions without all the facts is just an assumption. The photography portion of the hobby has been a lesson for Jacobs as well. I'm learning from him too, he said. It's a two-way street. The two have studied train photos, noticing photographers focus on a certain engine, or they will shoot in specific weather. The two will instead look for various sceneries or backdrops behind any train. And you don't go to work just on sunny days, Jacob said. I tell him to tell a story when you take a picture. through the train, grabbed the person's eye. Decatur isn't Isaiah's only train stop. He also visits others throughout the state, including Chillicothe, Streeter, Edelstein, Springfield, Riverton, and Oakley. The various railway companies and what they deliver is an interest to him. The faster ones are also an interesting subject. Isaiah said he uses the hobby as train therapy. It's relaxing, it's therapeutic, he said. The motion of something that big, the sounds, the sights. And there are some photos that accompany the article here. Isaiah is shown kneeling down on one knee with his camera in front, looking through the lens, and a train in the background. And let's look at another photo here. And it's a photo of the photographer and enthusiast, train enthusiast himself. It says Eisenhower High School freshman Isaiah Bradford has an interest in taking photos of trains. His love of trains started when he was 2. And in the background, there are a series of tracks, and Isaiah is shown holding his Canon camera with a long lens and a lens hood as well. The sidebar is hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know of a person or of a story that exemplifies the best of Decatur? Contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. Decatur Police gets aims to counter armed violence. Chief seeks to keep officers accountable. This article's by Tony Reed, Decatur. Describing a recent spike in Decatur gun violence and murder as unacceptable, the city's police chief told council members what he intends to do about it, while also safeguarding the lives and civil rights of those who find themselves confronted by police. Chief Jim Getz, like many chiefs in other cities, is trying to contain a rising tide of gun violence on one hand, while also dealing with a nationwide focus on in-custody deaths and alleged police brutality on the other. First, in combating the violence, Getz outlined a multi-pronged effort to react to armed trouble more quickly and apprehend those responsible. We have used our community action team. This is a group of officers trained above and beyond what our normal officers are trained to do, said Getz, addressing a wide-ranging Monday evening city council study session that looked at increased violent crime and the issues of police training, recruitment, and tactics, among other topics. Getz said these specialist officers gather intelligence and tips and target known trouble spots and known troublemakers, especially those operating in violent gangs. We are not just going out and randomly picking on people, the chief said. We know who the shooters are, we know who the gangs are, and we are going to focus on those folks until they put their guns down. A Herald and Review analysis of recent sworn police affidavits involving arrests where weapons and illegal drugs were seized bears out what Getz said. Police have high crime areas and key suspects under surveillance and are ready to move quickly when they see crime happening, hear gunshots, or believe trouble is about to start. But it's only one of many approaches Getz outlined to council members. He said he had tried reaching out through community contacts for a gang ceasefire and plans were underway to fund a weapons buyback program to get more guns off the streets. Advanced technology is another weapon the police are trying out. A brief document prepared for Monday's meeting by Getz and City Manager Scott Wrighton said the city will begin deployment of surveillance camera equipment in selected neighborhoods in 2021 to see if such gear is effective in reducing crime. Getz told the councilors, "You're going to cut your crime rate with the widespread deployment of such cameras." The briefing document also said police are monitoring the effectiveness of shot spotter technology to track and pinpoint sources of gunfire. It is extremely expensive, and its track record so far in directly preventing gun violence is unconvincing, said the document. but we will continue to monitor the use of ShotSpotter technology as it is deployed elsewhere. And council members were told surveillance technology now cuts both ways to assure police get accountability too. Getz outlined the deployment of an officer-worn cameras along with new high-definition in-car cameras that will give a more independent and detailed record of what happens in citizen police encounters of all kinds. The briefing document for Monday's study session said Illinois has passed laws giving widespread public access to the footage produced by police body cameras. Effectively, this means that the local police department has very little discretion in deciding those situations where OWC videos can or cannot be released to the public, the document adds. Getz and Wrighton also say that, as well as having their actions monitored, Decatur police officers are undergoing rigorous training to help them do the right thing in all situations. Right now, officers receive 560 hours of training at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center in Decatur, and since 2017, the department has provided more than 95,000 hours of training in some 2,660 training opportunities given to serving officers. There has been an emphasis on de-escalation training to try to avoid the use of force in difficult situations, and by the end of this year or early in 2021, the document authorized by Getz and Wrighton said officers will receive new tactical training to help them control suspects who try to fight or resist arrest. The idea being better training reduces the need to resort to higher levels of force in making arrests. As federal moves continue toward what Getz and Wrighton describe as rising standards for law enforcement conduct, both said the Decatur Police Department is already well prepared and getting better. Whatever the new transparency and accreditation standards look like, we believe the DPD will compare with them favorably, the document assured counselors. Nationally, scrutiny of law enforcement has increased in the wake of police shootings of George Floyd in Minneapolis and Jacob Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, prompting calls for defunding. The work of Getz was praised by Janelle Norman, Decatur NAACP president, who also spoke at Monday's meeting. She suggested another step forward, however, would be having officers live in high-crime neighborhoods, but Getz wasn't so sure about that one. The chief said he has heard similar ideas work well in some cities and not so well in others. He said the police get a lot of threats and cited one example of a recently arrested attempted murder suspect with surveillance video identifying officers' private vehicles on his cell phone. I don't think you would have any officers who would be willing to do it, he said of the neighborhood housing idea. Not with the threats made toward officers and just the hatred towards the police right now. Okay, moving on. Looking for our next local article. We're on page A3, local and state. Murder trial stalls after self-defense claim. Anderson pleading not guilty to 4 alternative murder counts. This article is by Tony Reed from Decatur. The Decatur murder trial of Matthew A. Anderson, Jr. was halted before it could begin Monday after the defendant suddenly switched his story and said he had grounds for a case of self-defense. Macon County Circuit Judge James Coriel, noting the case dates to January of 2019 and has dragged on for 18 months, said he would put the trial off to allow defense attorneys to prepare a defense of self-defense. Coriel said if he didn't, it could lay grounds for Anderson to make a claim of ineffective assistance of counselor later on if he's convicted. Mr. Anderson is facing a charge that essentially, if convicted, would result in a sentence of life in prison or close to it. We're looking at a 45-year minimum and a lifetime maximum, said Coriel, emphasizing the high stakes for Anderson. The prosecution case laid out in sworn affidavits from Decatur police accuses Anderson, 22, of gunning down and killing 18-year-old Curtis T. Hairston January 4, 2019. Detectives said there had been a shootout in the restroom of the former Long John Silver's restaurant, 701 West El Dorado Street. Hairston had gone to the restaurant, police say, to discuss trading guns and had been ambushed by Anderson, who had been wounded and hospitalized after the exchange of gunfire. Anderson is pleading not guilty to 4 alternative murder counts. Defense attorney Monroe McWard told the judge the previous defense strategy, based on many months of interviews with Anderson, was straightforward. My client consistently said, "I went in there, I got jumped, I got shot," Monroe explained as Anderson, dressed in a jail jumpsuit, sat watching him in court. "At no time until Saturday night at 9:30 p.m. did I ever hear a scenario with him include anything that remotely related to self-defense." McWard said the sudden strategy change makes it look like he hadn't done his job, but insisted there was little he could do but seek a delay after Anderson suddenly dropped his self-defense bombshell. McWard said he needs time to hunt down new witnesses and evidence related to the claim and examine police reports with a Champaign County connection. The lawyer did not elaborate in court, but a connection with another shooting death is already clear. Hairston, the victim in the Decatur case, was described as the third person involved in the murder of Bloomington man Edgerton Dover in December 2018. "I think the interests of justice dictate that this matter be continued," Monroe said of Anderson's Decatur trial. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Kristen Krivonik said, "Anderson's sudden change of tack left her with many questions and feeling incredibly frustrated by this." She also asked for, and the judge agreed, that the defense pick up the out-of-state travel and hotel expenses of several prosecution witnesses already in town. Already in town for the now-canceled trial, Coryell scheduled a new pretrial hearing for October 5th. And there's a nice photo in the middle of the page, rather large. Outdoor dining ahead. Custom Hardscapes employee Luis Ochoa works getting bricks shaped for an outdoor dining area on Monday at the Gin Mill in Decatur. Custom Hardscapes was to finish on Monday with the patio, and the area will be available soon for dining. The restaurant at 124 East Prairie Avenue was approved by Decatur City Council members and will help with funding a portion of the block. The patio will feature tables set up for outdoor dining similar to other restaurants on the block. And it's a beautiful image of a running bond layout style of kind of a red brick. And Luis Ochoa has his brick saw, and he's eyeballing the cut line brick to go into the large saw. And behind him in the photo is the picture of the gin mill, looking very nice in the background, and several other workers are working with brick in the area as well. Very nice photo, and a nice sunny day for it. On to the next article here. Police dealer robbed customer. This by Tony Reed from Decatur. Police said a Decatur drug dealer robbed and threatened to beat a would-be customer to death with a baseball bat after the customer criticized the quality of the cannabis he was selling and refused to buy any. A sworn affidavit from the Decatur police said the dealer, 21, robbed the 45-year-old customer of $40 after shoving the aluminum bat into his face around 9 p.m. August 24th and demanding, "Where's the money?" The affidavit said the dealer was found and arrested early Saturday. Writing in the affidavit, Officer Philip Ganley said the customer was left with abrasions from the force with which the bat was pushed into his face. He stated he feared the dealer would beat him severely with the baseball bat if he didn't give him any money, added Ganley. As the dealer was leaving, he turned back toward him. He pointed the bat at him and stated something similar to, "You better not call anyone about this. I'll come back here and end you." Ganley said the customer told police he had earlier invited the dealer to his apartment because he wanted to see what you got, as stated in a text message between the two men. Ganley said the customer was looking to buy a dime bag with a street value of $10, but refused when he saw what the dealer had to sell. The dealer was booked on a preliminary charge of armed robbery. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records Monday showed that the man remains in custody where he is being held with no bail available. Police said he has a previous Macon County robbery conviction. DCFS officials cope with pandemic. Virtual visits, phone calls often replacing in-person visits. Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Child welfare officials in Illinois told a panel of state lawmakers Monday that the COVID-19 pandemic has hindered but not completely prevented their efforts to monitor children at risk of abuse or neglect. Without question, the pandemic has been and continues to be extremely challenging for all of us, both personally and professionally, Mark Smith, acting director of the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, told a Senate panel during a virtual meeting Monday. But everyone who works for or in partnership with us has kept their eyes on our mission to keep children safe. Smith said one of the first things DCFS did was to move its child abuse reporting hotline, officially known as the State Central Register, to a remote environment so that employees could answer the phones from their homes. Gail Hopper, who manages the hotline, said the people who answer those phones have been working remotely since March 23rd. The hotline today continues to work remotely, and staff are working from home every day, Hopper said. Hopper noted that there was a sharp decline in the number of reports received from mandatory reporters, which are licensed professionals, such as teachers and healthcare workers, who are required by law to report cases of suspected abuse or neglect, especially during the early weeks of the pandemic. In response, she said, agency officials reached out to members of the pandemic of the American Pediatrics Association and to the Illinois State Board of Education to instruct doctors and teachers about how to report to the hotline, even when they were only seeing children remotely. By July and August, she said, call volume began to pick up again, even exceeding the numbers reached during the same months in 2019, even though the total number of calls this year is about 18% lower than last year. This can be attributed to the increase of reporting by law enforcement, by the steady reporting of medical professionals, and the community observing or reporting firsthand information of child maltreatment, she said. Mike Lubelfeld, superintendent of the North Shore High School District 112 in Highland Park, said the pandemic has been challenging for teachers and others who were only able to meet their students remotely this spring. Okay, let's look for our next article here. Well, thanks for your patience. We're still looking here. We've moved on to page B4, which is titled the money section, but there's an article here about Venus. Planet Venus. Venus's clouds could host life atmosphere. Astronomers have hope, but caution. It's not a smoking gun. This article's by Seth Borenstein, the Associated Press. Astronomers have found a potential sign of life high in the atmosphere of neighboring Venus. Hence, there may be bizarre microbes living in the sulfuric acid-laden clouds of the hothouse planet. Two telescopes in Hawaii and Chile spotted in the thick Venus clouds the chemical signature of phosphine, a noxious gas that on Earth is only associated with life, according to a study in Monday's journal Nature Astronomy. Several outside experts and the study authors themselves agreed this is tantalizing, but said it is far from the first proof of life on another planet. They said it doesn't satisfy the extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Let's read that again. Doesn't satisfy the extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence standard established by the late Carl Sagan, who speculated about the possibility of life in the clouds of Venus in 1967. It's not a smoking gun, said study co-author David Clements, an Imperial College of London astrophysicist. It's not even gunshot residue on the hands of your prime suspect, but there is a distinct whiff of cordite in the air, which may be suggesting something. As astronomers plan for searches for life on planets outside our solar system, a major method is to look for chemical signatures that can only be made by biological processes called biosignatures. After three astronomers met in a bar in Hawaii, they decided to look that way as at the closest planet to Earth, Venus. They searched for phosphine, which is three hydrogen atoms and a phosphorus atom. On Earth, there are only two ways phosphine can be formed, study author said. One is in an industrial process. The other way is part of some kind of poorly understood function in animals and microbes. Phosphine is found in ooze at the bottom of ponds, the guts of some creatures like badgers, and perhaps most unpleasantly, associated with piles of penguin guano, Clements said. Study co-author Sarah Seeger, an MIT planetary scientist, said researchers exhaustively went through every possibility and ruled all of them out. Volcanoes, lightning strikes, small meteorites falling into the atmosphere. Not a single process we looked at could produce phosphine in high enough quantities to explain our team's findings. Chunk of Greenland ice cap breaks off Copenhagen, Denmark. An enormous chunk of Greenland's ice cap has broken off in the northeastern Arctic, a development that scientists say is evidence of rapid climate change. The glacier section that broke off is 42.3 square miles. It came off the fjord, I don't believe I can pronounce this, I'll try, Nyhavnsfjorden, which is roughly 50 miles long and 12 miles wide, the National Geographic Geological Survey of Denmark and Greenland said Monday. The glacier is at the end of the northeast Greenland ice stream, where it flows off the land and into the ocean. Annual end of melt season changes for the Arctic's largest ice shelf in northeast Greenland are measured by optical satellite imagery. The survey, known as GEUS, said it shows that the area's ice losses for the past 2 years each exceeded 19 square miles. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break here and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Please stay tuned.